Hello and welcome to another episode of Crowd Blunders, where we give you our ill-informed opinions on what we think is working for us with our crowdfunding campaigns. My name's Alan.
And I'm Caleb.
And we are so excited to have everyone today because we have two very special guests. Caleb, do you want to go and take it away?
Sure. We've got Kat Kalamia and Phil Falco. Hopefully I said your guys' names right.
You're all good.
You got it.
Okay, so Kat and Phil are the creators of a comic book called The Beast and Snow, which is a not safe for work queer fairy tale romance. And so we wanted to bring them on to talk about not safe for work comics, because that's something we haven't talked about on the show before. And it's also something that Alan and I have very little experience with. Well, that's not true. Alan, you wrote a titty book. So Alan's got a little experience. I have no experience with it at all. And it's not something we've talked about. So we just wanted to have you guys on, talk about the benefits, the pitfalls, what to look out for, what you've learned doing it. And so I guess, Alan, since you are the one who has written a book in this category, you want to give us a quick glimpse into what your experience was like, and was it a positive one?
So mine is a little bit different because I got asked to continue a series. So this wasn't like an original idea or anything like that I had. Just a writer backed out or couldn't do the next issue. So especially with a lot of the crowdfunding stuff, time is money. So then I got asked to complete the second issue and going forward. So I think my experience with it's been, I mean, you know, relatively positive. It wasn't my idea for it. But I think the one thing, and Caleb, we've talked about this before, looking at it just through a very narrow lens, you know, we have these passion projects that we put a lot of ourselves into and we're so happy with, and you know, we have to really go out there and promote it and jump on, you know, other podcasts or do cross promotion with people. But it seems like the not safe for work books, they are kind of their own beast, because little to no promotion went in for the one that I was involved with, and it had made more money than any project I've ever been associated with. And it wasn't like one of those things where it's like, ha, at least I came up with the idea. It was just one of those like, oh man, that's a little bit disheartening. But then you just roll with the punches.
Okay, so that's a good bridge, because Kat and Phil, you guys are doing this non-safe workbook. Have you ever done one before, or is this the first one?
This is the first one.
Okay, and what drew you to doing a book like this?
Wow, I'll start, and I'm sure Phil could piggyback off of this, but we just really saw what the market was on Kickstarter, and we wanted to challenge, I mean, that's the truth, but yeah. We also wanted to challenge ourselves and do something that was different, and tell a not safe for work book in a way that has story and has a bigger world. And also public domains do really well on Kickstarter. So we wanted to tell our own story in that regard and be like, okay, these are things that do well. Can we make this our own? And can we make a like kind of Game of Thrones style story in that regard? Phil, anything you want to piggyback off of with that?
I'll add that we definitely carved a space in the queer comics arena, and you know, we wanted to continue that. We wanted to, I think I'd say before Beast and Snow, you know, Slice of Life, our queer webtoon, was probably what we were most well known for, and with Beast and Snow we really wanted to tell the anti Slice of Life, which is, you know, wholesome webtoon, you know, enjoyable by pretty much any age group. And then with Snow we wanted to tell a more mature, gritty, and as Kat said, you know, like very friendly to the market story. So it was very much a reaction and a challenge. And, you know, thankfully people have really come out for it. It's done, exceeded our expectations. So it's been really rewarding really quickly.
So speaking of, you guys are coming from a background of doing a lot of queer comics. That's like definitely how I knew the two of you. From the different anthologies and the web comic and everything else is very queer focused. So, are there any because of the theme of this podcast, are there any mistakes that you've made in doing queer comics that you've learned from?
Is there any mistakes? Phil, why don't you take that first? I'm trying to think of some.
I think that one thing with the first volume of Bivisibility that we got, you know, a little helpful feedback on is, you know, finding a balance. You know, I think that the first volume of Bivisibility, it's all bisexual stories, but it was mostly female and femme protagonists and leads of the stories. So like that was a big feat of feedback we got that, you know, especially when you're doing an anthology where people are looking for variety, you know, we needed to expand our reach a little bit and get some more submissions that were, you know, masculine, male, non-binary, et cetera. And, you know, that was something we course corrected with our second volume of Bivisibility, which was a lot more balanced and something we keep in mind whenever we do our anthologies now, making sure that we get that variety in. That's definitely what comes to mind as the biggest misstep. I think, trying to think if there's anything else major. I know we've definitely learned lessons, but that's,
I mean, maybe I just the idea of how many pages you should have for a book, but honestly, in the long run, I think it helped us because we always kind of go back and forth of, was it a mistake that Bivisibility was 44 pages for that first volume? And then we made a second volume that did well on Kickstarter, but it obviously didn't do it. It didn't make the numbers of the first one. The first one made 1300 and the second one made like 850. So it's like, oh, if we made it cheaper again, would have gone more backwards on Kickstarter. But you also have to think of like the afterlife of a comic. So the thing that does really well with the trade graphic, or the graphic novel, is that it's cheaper to make it's like $4 to, if you're trying to even it out, it's like $4 to make a graphic novel right. of that size. But so you get to sell it for more, like you can make more of a profit off of it. So I think that's something we're still like, was that a mistake or was it a good thing?
We spend countless hours debating page count.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I feel that for sure. I have had a lot of conversations with a lot of people about page count and where to land on it. Cause like you said, it's more money, to have more pages, but in the long run, like, you know, you got to think about the lifetime of a product for exactly. sure. And okay. So I guess the queer comics angle is very interesting to me because I think what I'm hearing you say is that you want to be very conscious of like inclusivity and like all the different aspects of what could go into a queer comic. I guess, do the both of you consult with sort of other people in that community to kind of figure out what to include or not include? Like do you have like, I don't want to say a focus group, but like, do you talk to people who are outside of your own identities any of that?
For sure. The second volume of Bivisibility in particular, we had Phil's brother, who's trans, become an editor on it because we wanted, you know, a different side of it all. So all the time we try to get different perspectives. Yeah.
On Hairology, we had Jamila Rouser as our co-editor who we brought on to bring on another perspective as well. So that's something we're always very conscious of. You know, we know that Kat and I, we have our own experiences and our own knowledge bases, but you know, you cannot know everything about other identities and experiences. So we try to be conscious of that and, you know, bring on other voices to help cater our anthologies, especially. And, you know, anything we write, we run by focus groups, formal, or informal. So it's very much a part of our process.
No, that's awesome because I really like the concept and the layout and presentation for Hairology. Where did that come from, and why did you feel like that book was important to tell?
Yeah, go on, Phil. You go for it. Yeah, just me, right?
I'll let you tell it if you want to tell it, but
go for it.
Sure. So, Kat and I, yeah, we work together. We're very good friends. We're constantly just like, you know, talking about whatever we're thinking about that week. And you know, Kat and my brother, who Kat mentioned previously, both have curly hair, and since they met, would always talk about their experience with curly hair and how nobody who doesn't have curly hair knows like the weird things people say to you when you have curly hair. And it was always kind of like a running joke in our group of friends. And then we were on another podcast at one point, and somebody, no, it wasn't a podcast, excuse me, it was
Like
a
it was a
call.
work call.
It was a professional call with some with a publisher, and somebody said that we need to think bigger, like cat's hair, like something like that, very completely unprompted. And both of us just kind of laughed it off. And then after the call, they were like, that was such a random thing to say on a pretty professional setting. And then, Kat was like, oh, Pete, like we talk about hair all the time. Like, we want to try different anthologies. We want to branch out a little bit. That would be a cool topic to do. And I love the idea. And, it just kind of snowballed from there. And, thankfully we were connected with Jamila from a friend and fellow comic creator. And she was so excited to jump on the project as well. And it was just really snowballed from there. And I think it's one of our best, and I mean, all of our anthologies we love, but one of my favorites in the variety it has, because there's just so many different places you can go with hair.
Yeah, and it's again just like everyone's hair, it's unique and special, right? So I just thought that that was just a really cool thing. So yeah, I just remember looking at that, and I loved again the layout presentation, and it was just a cool story that I didn't know anyone needed. You know what I mean? It was just one of those. I just loved it.
So,
Thank you.
let's steer the conversation back to the Not Safe for Work comics. What advice would you guys have for someone who's like either is just getting into making comics or has made comics before but wants to do a Not Safe for Work comic? What advice would you have for that person?
Good art, honestly. Like I've seen some Not Safe for Work books on Kickstarter that I'm like, man, this could have done better if it had a really good thumbnail or like told me anything about the book. But yeah, a good presentation for it's really just like anything else. It's Not Safe for Work book, like to be successful in it, it's almost the same as any other book. It's just have a good Kickstarter page. Have good art, spend the money on it. Like if you can, I think just don't cut corners. I think that's always when I see a book not do well on Kickstarter, I could see which corner they cut, and most people can.
For sure.
I think where that now I could be completely off base here, but I think the problem that a lot of people think with not safe for work titles is, oh, I just have to have a not safe for work cover, and it's just going to sell the book. So I see some projects and creators have reached out to me to like do like a cross promotion, for example, and they have zero interior pages. It's all just covers that they're just trying to sell their book on. Do you
Yeah,
guys,
definitely don't do
yeah, I was going to say, do you think that that's a
that.
mistake, or,
I definitely think it is. How about you, Phil?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, I think it's all about presentation. If you're trying to sell a comic show, you can't just go on, people cover by for sure, but you can't just show the cover. You need to show the product people are getting, And as Kat mentioned earlier, we wanted to tell a not safe for work story, and we also wanted to tell a story and a genre story. And we tried to. It's a hodgepodge. It's a whole bunch of buzzwords all thrown together. You have Snow White, Beauty and the Beast, vampire, werewolf, queer, fairy tale, NSFW,
Sexy.
sex. Yeah, there's
It's
a lot of buzzwords, right?
exactly. Yeah. So,
Yeah.
that was very much our approach, and we wanted to cater the page to that. We wanted to show like, oh, like, it's not safe for work. It's a romance. Like, there's action, there's horror. But like, I think when you're building your page, the biggest mistake you can make is just not show people what you're selling, because you could slap a really sexy thumbnail on, and then you'll get a lot of people clicking because it's a sexy thumbnail. And then if they don't know what they're looking at, or you're not presenting the product that people are going to be purchasing, then you're not going to get any backers for it. So I think just
Oh, for
know your
sure.
product.
And that's something we really want to do with Beast and Snow is that, we wanted to make this page as professional as all our other ones, where again, you could have just easily had a thumbnail or had the covers and like, look at us, look who's doing this cover, look who's doing that cover. But, it was important to us to have lettered pages even. I want you to read the book and show you. And we had a couple of people that came up to us and said, I normally don't back Not Safe for Work books. A, I know it's you, so that's why I backed it. But B, I'm backing it because I know there's a story there. And that's something we want to present on this page. Again, like it's not just boobs, we promise. But there
There
are
are
boobs.
boobs, but it's
So
not just
yeah.
boobs.
Well,
but it's not just that.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to say, I think my, as a creator, my hesitation in getting into these books is, like you said, I've seen so many of them where, you know, not to dig on our mutual friend, Mike Tiener, but, you know, where it's like, you got 20 different sexy covers, and then I barely know what the book is about. And when I see the interiors, I'm not that into it. But the interiors of your book, that, and I love that you put in, a whole bunch of lettered pages. I mean, that's something I do on every campaign. I'm a big fan of like giving it away because I want people to read it. That's why, but the book just looks great. And it looks like a comic that I would read, which is, I think, the biggest thing, like you said, it just looks great. And that's where I think that, seeing your book, the reason that I reached out to you guys is because I think that for me bridged the gap of like, oh, this can be done in a way where it's good and not just classy. A cash grab, you know, like, which is great. And so, yeah, I think that that's from my perspective, you know, not that this would matter to anyone, but if you want me to back your Not Safe for Work comic, you better show me that it's, actually going to be a good comic.
For sure.
But I mean, yeah.
Sorry to cut you off there.
No, go ahead.
That's always what we look for as well. And one thing we learned from our audience as well, you know, as we mentioned, we have a lot of vocal readers on our other queer titles. And a lot of them specifically were saying they wanted like Not Safe for Work content, but like with a story. And like, you know, they were specifically saying like, you know, we love the story on this and we would love like, you know, a more mature take. So that was very much at the forefront of our mind when we were doing this. We wanted to appeal to a new audience, but also like build on and expand on things that our existing audience were interested in seeing.
And also it's interesting, and going back to what you were saying, Caleb, was that it, you know, for people that might not know or never backed Not Safe for Work books, because again, there's a lot of people that maybe we know personally or people that are in the community that never backed these type of books. It's funny because yesterday we were spending time with Phil's family who knows Kickstarter, but like, you know, they're like, oh, wow, you're making this comic. And we kept explaining it to everybody. It's like, it's Game of Thrones, you know, that's the type of story we want to tell. But it really is like it's a book that has sex and it so happens to have sex and also has a great story that's connected to the story. We don't have sex just for the sake of sex. Like, it's connected to the story, you know?
Right. No, that makes sense. I wanted to circle back around to something that you said, that you mentioned, which is that you have to be willing to spend money. And I think that that's a really tricky topic for people, especially people who either don't have means to begin with or who are really new to the comic book game in terms of making comics, because it can be hard to be able to spend money. But I think that that's a pretty huge thing to talk about when it comes to, if you look on Kickstarter and you're seeing what's successful, like a lot of the most successful projects are projects that have already been heavily invested in before they get to Kickstarter. And I guess, how do you guys feel about that? Because I think for me, it's just a reality that I've really had to accept. But I also recognize how that can feel, I think, unfair or hard to reach for people.
I have a few comments on that. I do Kickstarter consulting. So there are times where I talked to people and I said, hey, you're not ready to launch your Kickstarter yet. I would save money. Just like if you, you know, want to go on vacation or something, you save $5, you save $10 a month and you build and you eventually save enough money to go on that vacation. And that's the same thing. I think people think they can make comics and just be like, I can actually spend $0 on this. I'm like, no, there's other things that goes into it. I always use the example of like making a restaurant, right? If you're building a restaurant, you have to pay for the space. You have to pay for the ingredients. You have to pay for your staff. So it's just like building a restaurant. It's the same thing as comics. There's so many different gears. And we always say you have to spend money to make money. And I'll quote Mr. Beast on this. And sometimes we talk about this. I like his videos a lot, but I'm interested in his way of how he makes money. But he always said that when he started his YouTube channel, he always continued to invest. If he made $100, he invested $100 in a new camera. Once he made, $1,000, he invested that $1,000 into giving that away and making a video about it. And I think that's a really good mentality, is like, guess spend money to make money. But Phil, do you have any follow-ups on that?
One thing I'll add to that, and also specifically respond to Caleb, what you said about the convention on Kickstarter now kind of being, crowdfunding a complete book. I think we did a lot of, we always are very present on Kickstarter and looking at the campaigns that are live. And before this campaign launched, we looked at a lot of other Not Safe for Work titles. And as much as the convention is, crowdfunding a complete book effectively, it's definitely not the only method to, I think, as Kat said, you need to present a product that people are interested in. But if you don't have the funds to create a full book, you can kickstart budget properly. Know how much you actually need to raise to create this book before you do a Kickstarter if you don't have a complete product. But you can produce, 5 pages of previews and then a handful of covers and run a Kickstarter. And I think that's a good middle ground for folks who don't know. Comics are obviously investing, just like any property that you're seeking to make money off of and to sell. So I think that, you need to know your budget. You need to know how much you can spend, but you also could do it piecemeal. You could use crowdfunding for its intended purpose and, present the snippet of the final product and then use the crowdfunding to actually produce that project. Just Beast and Snow actually isn't 100% complete yet. We have most of the book complete. Usually, since we do so many projects, we will have a complete book when we launch. But for this one, we actually kind of had to remind ourselves, just be transparent with your backers, give a realistic delivery date when they expect the final product. And, Kickstarter is still a pre-order service, effectively. People are not necessarily expecting the product right away. So it's another approach you can take.
Funny enough for that one, it didn't have to do with funding. It was more of every artist works in a different pace. And we could have waited until it was over, but we also know what the calendar of Kickstarter is. October, November, surprisingly enough, is a really, really, really hard time on Kickstarter. People think that's the best time to launch, but every project we've ever done then is always like less than we expect. So we didn't want to do this in October, November was mostly why, but we wanted to do it for this year. So that's mostly why we launched it earlier, but like in our tiers and everywhere, we let them know when this book is going to be done. And we obviously have, we work with our artists and we don't say, we think it's going to be done in December. Like, no, we like have a concrete schedule of why we think it's going to be done this time.
Sure. Yeah, no, for sure. And certainly my projects are a mix. I mean, I did a book earlier this year that was a complete graphic novel that was like 30% done when I launched, and it's getting close to being done now. But of course I communicated that with the backers. And then I do other books that are already done when they launch. And I think a lot of that just has to do with backer trust. I mean, Alan and I have talked on the show about this a lot, but over time you can build up backer trust and have multiple unfilled projects at once. And that's not really a problem. If people know that you're going to get the book to them. And so that's a great way to mitigate, Phil, like you said, maybe not having the money that you need, being able to put some, to just have some of the book done. I think, for me, what I've been thinking about a lot is just what sort of talent and presentation you're investing in, period. Right? Because I think a lot of times the temptation, especially for new creators, and it certainly was a temptation for me early on, is to just work with people who aren't really ready to make professional comics because they charge less. If you're viewing this as a business, like that's not a good move, right? Because the projects aren't going to do as well.
You want to make the comic that you're proud of. You want to make a comic that you are comfortable and confidently can present to people. So, yeah. You know, like,
yeah,
what
don't
you
skip
said,
on lettering, don't skip on
right.
Art.
Yeah,
oh,
Kat,
yeah,
that's
that's
exactly what I was
where.
going to say. Yeah, Kat, like, exactly to your guys's point, it's one of those things where you just save the money. You know, you are in charge of your own schedule for Kickstarter. No one's forcing you to launch your first book, you know.
Right.
So that's why you just take your time. And trust me, it will be worth it. Instead of rushing it out, if you can wait, you know, maybe 4 to 6 more months to put it out, but have something totally different than what you would have presented in the first place, I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
And you can build gradually as well. You know, Kat and I are at the point now where we're basically doing a Kickstarter a month, but it took time to build to that point where A, we had the backlog because we have multiple projects running concurrently, but then B, building that backer trust that Caleb had talked about, that, you know, confidence that if I back a project this month and a project next month, I haven't gotten last month yet, but I know it's coming and it'll meet the due date that they have given. So, you know, I think
Yeah,
that's a very important.
fulfill your
Exactly. You
project.
got to fulfill.
Yep.
Oh yeah, for sure.
As much as is our maybe sometimes our least favorite part of the experience,
Oh
it's
yeah, it's the one Caleb and I talk about. But hey, like we said too, though, you know, if you do have a project and it's not going to meet the due date that you already set the expectation for, transparency. Just be
Oh,
honest.
100%.
And if you've already built that trust, they know they're going to get it. You know, but just let them know, hey, we're running a little bit behind. Thank you so much for your patience.
Oh,
Sometimes things happen outside of your
yep.
control, but backers by and large are very understanding if you're communicative.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of blunders and fulfillment issues, Alan and I did a crossover print last year, and I completely spaced on ordering it, and I sent out all the pledges without it. But then I got it and I sent the print separately, which of course was like expensive. It an expensive mistake to make, but I think it was important because it, you know, I wanted to communicate to the
He'll
backers
never
that,
do it again.
yeah. So yeah, I think that backer trust element is really huge. Well, we have been talking for almost 30 minutes. So before we go, I want to give you guys, Kat and Phil, a chance to pitch us The Beast and Snow.
Ooh, we, you know
Back.
what's so funny about this project too? Well, you could definitely pitch first, Phil, is that it's a book that we haven't pitched that
We're still,
often.
we always define our like real pitch when we're at our conventions when we're selling them, but I'll we'll both do our attempts right now. Beast and Snow, it's a queer NSFW fairy tale romance. If you're a fan of supernatural romance, new twists on old fairy tales, or not safe for queer stories, then you found the right place. Kat, I'll let you do the story pitch.
Oh, the story pitch. I thought you were gonna say you could do the gibberish you usually say, which is usually Snow White, Beauty and the Beast. They're vampires, they're werewolves, gay, sex.
That's
That's usually the pitch.
the
But
story
no,
pitch. You got it.
there it is. But yeah, the story is about Snow White, who's a people pleaser, and she dies, becomes a vampire, and now is on this journey to save a damsel in distress. And there's werewolves involved. There's other supernatural elements, so go check it out.
Cool. Well, thank you very much. We will put a link to the Kickstarter. If you're listening to this, when this episode comes out, the Kickstarter will still be live, but we will put a link to the Kickstarter and then also to Kat and Phil's website where you can check out all their books. And Alan, do you have anything else before we call it?
Yeah, no, just thank you guys so much for coming on. You know, we appreciate everything that you guys are doing. You know, for each individual community that you guys are always working with, but also for the Kickstarter community as a whole. Just thank you guys
Thank
because I
you.
know that you know, we've cross-promoted before with some of my titles and stuff, and you guys have always been so open and welcoming with everything. So yeah, just thank you guys for giving us another platform.
Thank
Yeah,
you.
we're always here. I think that's something I definitely want to echo before we end is that. You know, I think sometimes it's a little scary when, like, you know, let's say, you know, our project has 1,000 backers or whatever, and then it's like, oh, they have 1,000 backers, they'll never answer. Like, we are so always open to cross promotion. Just, you know, hit our door and knock on it, because we love helping the community.
Right on. Awesome. Okay. Until next time. Bye.
See ya.